And this now brings us to Chopin as a composer with this kind of background. Well, already in his earliest works that he wrote, we see the influence of Bach. And I have on the handout a piece of music that probably most of the pianists don't even know. I don't know, Maury, do you know this piece? I certainly didn't. The very first piece is the Opus 4 Sonata. This is the first Chopin sonata. This is the one that is never played, and I had real troubles even trying to find a recording of it. Actually, I couldn't find a recording of it. But if you look at that piece, you see, first of all, it begins, you know, kind of in imitation. Of course, I'm. And the melody, well, remember the second two-part invention in C minor? You know, it goes on like that. So many scholars have, or some scholars have suggested that, in fact, the opening of this movement is a reference to the second two-part invention of Bach, which, of course, Chopin would have known and taught very well. He did teach that music regularly. And it begins in kind of an imitation, rather free, to be sure. The second movement of this sonata begins with sort of almost like a canonic imitation at close quarters, like a little stretto. One voice, and then it goes one or two notes, then the second voice comes in, then the third voice comes in, all on this descending pattern. So it's a very, very tight, almost stretto-like thing. But there again, this idea of polyphony and imitation being there right at the very beginning. I don't play this piece, but let me just try to pound through it a little bit just to give you an idea. Then, of course, it goes on. So, already this is a very early work, and I believe this was not published in Chopin's life. Says nachgelassenes Werk, but has been given the opus number of 4. Okay, now just to look at a few other aspects of Chopin's music, how Bach influenced. One of the most famous examples, and the musicians here certainly know this, is the connection between Bach's Prelude in C major that opens the Well-Tempered Clavier with the first of his preludes, which is also in C major, and which in a number of ways resembles it. I don't have the music for the Well-Tempered there. Most of you know it, but I'll just remind you, you know, it basically is a series of ascending arpeggios, right? If you want, you can sing Ave Maria over it, as Gounod did later in the 19th century. That idea is taken into the prelude itself, the Chopin's prelude, from Opus 28. So you have these ascending arpeggiated figures that clearly is a reference to the Bach original. But what is also, I think, more important is the fact that what Chopin found in Bach's music, not just fugues, but everything he wrote, was an interplay of voices. And so this prelude of Bach really has a lot of things going on in it. Even though, by the way, in one version, he just simply wrote them as chords, you know, and then you are sort of suggested you arpeggiate in some way. Nonetheless, the chords have a certain kind of voice leading, where you have dissonances that resolve. Now, there's the dissonance. It resolves. This up here now resolves to that. C in the bass resolves down to the B. And the B in the bass resolves to that. And now you have this note is dissonant. Resolving down. Now you have the C is the dissonant. So all over the place, you're having these Bach has set up dissonant places which are then resolved. And that kind of thing occurs all over in the music of Chopin. You don't have strict polyphony like you have in a fugue, but you have these lines, or fragments of lines, fragments of melody, sometimes extended fragments of melody that drop in and out and draw attention to themselves. Another place I think of is the opening of the A-flat ballade, which starts with one note. Yeah, and then that's the melody, but then on the next eighth note is two notes, and then you have more, you know? And then in the left hand, so you have all these different things interacting with one another that can be pulled apart and sort of put on parallel horizontal planes. None of them complete in themselves all the way through, but it's the kind of thing that I just showed in the prelude of Bach that occurs there. So you have, anyway, this prelude, which is a very complex piece, and I find it very difficult to play. My right hand needs to be a little larger than it is. But it's, you have this thing in the bass note, plus it's arpeggiated. Right? And then you have a kind of middle thing that rises up, beginning with a rest. Right? And then in the second half of the bars, you see this descending pattern. And finally, you have a kind of, I don't know, it's not exactly polyphony or heterophony, but you have this kind of effect between the upper voice in the left hand, if so to speak, or the in the lower clef, I should say, and the main melody in the right. You have this. So reinforcing that, and you get, when you put all of those things together, you get this very complex texture. So if you can hear all these things going on simultaneously, so it's not simply just simply sort of arpeggiated figures, but there are various kinds of interweavings of voices that really make that texture very complicated. If you look at the next musical example, which is somewhere here, yes, from the seventh etude of Opus 10, also in C major, and by the way, the first etude, which is also in C major, is often considered another piece directly related to the Bach prelude that I played. This case is not the case. But here we have a very interesting, complicated, polyphonic texture. You have the etude is really about repeating notes and changing the finger on that note. So it's in the alto voice in the treble clef, and you can see the 2-1-2-1 fingering there. And so in a sense, that's sort of what this etude is about, as an etude, as an exercise. And if you just tie the two repeated notes together, you get this melody. Right? Over that, you have this voice, or this the upper voice. Sorry. Right. That's a tricky one there. If you look at Bach's unaccompanied music for one, or much of his organ music and so on, he often makes a single line out of really two voices. And so you also have two voices. If you take every other 16th note, beginning on the beat, you go this. And so on. If you take then the offbeat, the second, fourth, and sixth 16th notes, you get this. Did you get it right? No, that's not right. No, sorry. There we go. Much simpler, right? And then in addition to that, you have a tenor voice and a bass line, you know, these low bass notes. So you basically have implicit in this texture five different voices going on. And, you know, so I'm going to very slowly, because I don't play this piece, but you get... So, you know, like that, but let me now play someone who can play play you something by someone who can play the piece. His name is Murray Pariah, and so let's just... So it's not just about a tune on the top, it's all this stuff going on in the middle. Now, I could argue, and I probably would like to argue, that if one plays these pieces too fast, you miss a lot because of, and I frankly, I would probably levy that criticism here too, because I think there's a lot more to hear, but he does bring a lot of it out, and it isn't simply, you know, on the top of the melody. But and in any event, that's just a, you know, personal taste. But anyway, I hope in this, at least to have shown a little bit of how the spirit of Bach, you know, is embedded in this music, and that we really need to think of Chopin's music as polyphonic music, not just beautiful melodies with accompaniment, as is too often the case.